and welcome to World and Union Ball Society's weekly, or you know, almost weekly rugby show, getting an outside perspective on Irish rugby and on the game itself. I'm Mick McCarthy, joined as always by Morris Brosnan. Morris, how are you?
Great, Mick. How about you?
I'm all right. I'm on the back end of about 4 weeks of being sick. I think you're not. At 100% yourself.
I'm at the front stage of that, maybe.
Yeah. So people, well, I hope not. A terrible dose. dose. But look, I don't think people are too worried about our state of health, other than the fact that they might have to listen to our croaky voices for the next half an hour or so. But looking forward to today's show. Morris has been speaking to former Scotland international, former British and Irish Lion, Doddy Weir, earlier today, and we're going to hear a little bit from that conversation. People will know Doddy Weir for his amazing name, first of all, for his rugby exploits, but also sadly because he has developed motor neuron disease in recent years, but has also set up the My Name 5 Doddy Foundation, which sets up research and pays for research into motor neuron disease, and a very, 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 very worthy cause. And that is going to be the charity of choice for the Ireland-England Legends game, which is going to take place in February in the RDS. The last time that was done, it was done for Anthony Foley's family, and it was like 15,000 at the RDS. And these are deadly occasions, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just unbelievable crack. It's kind of nearly exciting and kind of also pretty entertaining. Like, it's and as you kind of stressed there, it's a really worthy cause, so yeah, definitely worth kind of looking into that if you have any sort of interest in
it. And ticketmaster.ie/ Irish Legends is the place to get tickets for that. You can get them for just a tenner. So we'll hear from Doddy Weir, hear his amazing story and all that, but lots to get to. Actually, just on the Irish Legends, the Irish England Legends thing, really quickly, it's so funny that this has come up, because just at the weekend watching the NFL playoffs, and you can't say NFL players or teams don't take the game seriously, anything like that, but you know, there was a point where there was a celebration. I think it was on the sideline, and people were just having a bit of crack, and there was just a little bit of kind of, you know, crack going on the sideline, basically. And my wife just made an interesting point. It was like, how come you never see rugby players smile or have any fun? And it's like, and it does seem like this generation, you're probably talking maybe Simon Zeebo aside, and like, what did he do? He taunted an Ulster player early in the year, and the referee gave out to him about it. So it's like, you're not really allowed to do it either. But like, this generation of rugby players just don't seem to have like any enjoyment of it. It's all intensity and seriousness, and that's fine. It's a really serious game, and it's their livelihoods, and it's their business, and everybody wants them to win, and we're so happy how good they are, and we want them to be serious. But would you mind them smiling every now and then? On the back of the whole Sexton thing in Thomond Park and everything like that.
I think it's like a bubble as well. Like, there's like a cultural emphasis on not, you know, diminishing what you're doing. Yeah. Which is kind of ridiculous, to be honest. But yeah, it's also when that's the standard, that's the bar that's set across the phrase. Like, you look at...
Do you want to laugh in Peter O'Mahony's face like that when you're losing by 3 points?
Yeah, or it kind of something that people would latch on to. They're constantly talking about, you know, like some sort of ammunition that you don't want to provide to the opposition. And it is ridiculous, but I guess it's just the way the game is like slowly started to go.
I mean, yeah, and look, I think if you could turn on and off, I suppose you can do that a little bit better in the NFL because you're not always on the field, but if you could turn on and off a little bit, you know, I think if everybody did it, it wouldn't be such an issue. But the reason I bring this up now is because that Ireland-England Legends game, if you go to those games, that's where the real personalities of these lads come from. You know, you see them intrude. And look, it is just genuinely a lot of fun. I know you can laugh at these things, or you know, you don't have to take it too seriously. Yeah. But it's good causes aside, and you should be doing it for the good cause. It's actually a good night out. Right in the middle of, you know, it's Six Nations rugby period. You kind of want to see these kind of games, or this, you know, it feels like a kind of a festival atmosphere around the big Six Nations games. So I would definitely get along to it if you can. Again, we'll hear from Doddy Weir later. But look, it's been a busy Christmas period, Morris. We'll talk about lots of different things. But all the Irish teams have played each other, the Irish Championship, almost, if you will. Munster out on top on Munster 2-1, Leinster 2-1. Leinster do have the better points difference, but you got to go head-to-head on these things.
Yeah, definitely. I think Munster will take most heart from what happened with this. Not only, like, the Leinster... Result aside, performance was not good. I don't think for either team really there. But when you look at what they did against Connacht, I think that was probably their most complete performance this year. Just in terms of finally getting attacking structures implemented, mm-hmm. seeing the difference somebody like Chris Farrell makes to their backline when he's actually there.
Yeah.
You would really hope he's there for them on Friday against Gloucester. I think he makes just such a phenomenal difference. It's really hard to judge an offensive game plan when somebody, a linchpin of it, isn't there. I mean, you know, you, when you, you,
yeah,
when
it
you're
hasn't
so,
been there at all, really. Like, yeah,
when you're so critical of, like, your game plan is you utilize what's at your disposal, and if one of your main assets isn't at your disposal and you try and look elsewhere, it's just naturally going to diminish. It's ideally it wouldn't be to the extent that it was, where you don't even score tries against Ulster, but it's an unfortunate but inevitable consequence of playing rugby.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think Leinster will be too worried. They didn't play well in Thomond Park. There's been a lot of conversation about that. Hammered Ulster 47 at the weekend. Then you look at Connacht and Ulster, and Connacht, I think, will be really happy despite only getting one win. But, you know, gave Munster a really good game, beat Ulster, should have beaten Leinster. I mean, that's, if that, you know, the last 10 minutes of that game happens 20 times, I think Connacht win 19 of them. So just suddenly looking like the, you know, at least shades of the 2016 team again, but they kind of, you know, you'd love them to have got one of the big wins there.
And speaking about Team Smiler, Connacht certainly seem like a team who are really enjoying their rugby.
Yeah.
And it's very evident in the way they play now. It's not necessarily, I've seen that reference a bit about maybe a throwback to Pat Lambs. I think it's slightly different when you look at somebody like Jack Harty, who kicks a huge amount of ball, kind of surprising amount of ball, but there's thinking behind everything they do. I think Nigel Carlin's footprint is really kind of obvious on this team. You mentioned the Munster game. I thought Farrell was amazing there. They've got real, they're kind of stacked in the centre there between Goodwin, who looked really, really good in the Challenge Cup. I know game time hasn't been massive there for him. You've got Daly now from Leinster, who I think is a really shrewd acquisition, and then obviously Bundyaki on top of that as well. So they've got massive option there. I think a lot of those players now can start to look towards maybe one eye and trying to force their way into an Ireland squad, certainly into a training squad for the Six Nations.
Yeah, so Tom Farrell's performance against Munster has definitely been the talking point in the last couple of days, and I've seen more than one person say that this is Joe Schmidt's definitely going to be at least having a look at that, as you said, possibly for the training squad. So that's great to see. 25-year-old came from the Exiles program, started off in Lansdowne, in Dublin. Yeah, so you know, everybody does take a different route, and it's nice to see different routes, but he definitely looks good enough
at this
level anyway. Yeah.
It's just a nice story. It's nice to see a guy who it didn't really work out for him. He came nowhere near the Leinster senior squad. I think he was knocking out Leinster A, but it just never worked out. So he went across initially to London Irish. That didn't really go too well either, but he went to Bedford after that. So he dropped down to a championship club effectively. I mean, he's playing over in the UK and managed to impress so much there that he's finally brought back into Connacht and hits the ground running. And you know, it wasn't just the Munster game. You look back at other games, he's often stands in as first receiver because he's so explosive and his footwork is so good that he can beat men first up, down that 10-12 channel, like he did it in South Africa twice. He's got a really good try off a line out there. So he's a guy, the only problem is that I even compared to back row, I think Ireland's strongest position is the centre. And if anyone who is casting an eye towards forcing the way into Schmidt's thinking, it's going to have to be based on the lines of being versatile enough, like a Will Addison who can effectively cover almost any position in the back line. Not going to be an out half, but other than that, he'd pretty much stand in anywhere. And Farrell doesn't really have that kind of versatility, and that's a problem. It's the same problem that somebody like Sam Arnold is going to have, same problem somebody like Stuart McCluskey is going to have, if you are really kind of serious about trying to force your way into that team, you're going to have something extra, something to force your way in, because the options are so phenomenal right now anyway.
Yeah, well, let's see how it goes anyway. It's good to look, never bad to have another option. And as you said, this wasn't a one-off performance. This was the culmination of an amazing run of form. Just on Connacht though, and I think this, we can kind of bring in Ulster here as well, because, you know, it wasn't an Irish championship really because of the Irish player welfare system and people only being able to play a certain amount of games. It's more a test of the strengths of squads, really. And Leinster are always going to have the most amount of that. Munster aren't in bad shape at the moment. But I'm looking at, I have no real issue with this system. I think that you lose out in certain things in the club game, but where we want Irish rugby to be, I think it has to happen.
Yeah.
And we don't want guys off playing 40 games a season. But Connacht's biggest home league game of the year is either the Leinster or Munster game, right? They're home to Munster, and despite the amazing performance of Farrell, you know, and everything there, and that takes the, you know, you don't think they were exactly lost in the centre. Bundiaki isn't playing.
Yeah.
And I mean, this happens everywhere. There's players, like, you know, all over, like, in every game, there's somebody big, a marquee player, basically not playing in the league game. But it just feels like there's something wrong with a system where Bundiaki isn't playing against Munster at the end of that Christmas period.
And I mean,
especially for a team like Connacht who don't have, I mean, they want to win the Challenge Cup, don't get me wrong, but they're not in the Highland Cup game next week. They're not saving anybody. This is a bigger game than the Challenge Cup.
And I sympathise that view, but I still think it was probably the right call. Like, Bundiaki did play, I spoke off-air about him playing against Ulster, and, you know, this right up until the very last minute, demanding more to the extent where he wants him to go for the bonus point. Just that kind of appetite. And then you're looking at maybe, like, I think Andy Fred is now going to go for Europe, given the position, the situation they're in, what they did to Bordeaux last time, they're not playing them again this week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Aki play this week. So I think it's towards a long-term future. I also think, in terms of Connacht's interests, to develop players like Daly, now that they've got him from Leinster. I know.
And they those players need to play in big games as well. I just think that if you're going to the sports ground to see the Munster game, you're very disappointed if Aki isn't playing. And these guys are marquee players, and you know they can't play every week. And you don't want to, like, there's other sides of what I'm saying as well that people will say, oh, what? So, like, Cardiff fans are supposed to just say, okay, you know, you'll play a second team against us because it doesn't matter as much as an Irish derby. But, you know, there does have to be decisions made, I think, sometime. And look, you're playing three Irish derbies in a row. You probably can't play all 3 weeks. I don't know. I just find it, especially for a home game, especially for a game against Munster, I think it's disappointing. Connacht ended up playing brilliantly.
Yeah.
Easily could have won the game.
Definitely.
You know, so it's not that big an issue. But if you look at then at Ulster, they beat Munster in their first game. Everything's looking good after good Heineken Cup run. Then, you know, they lose to Connacht, half a team probably, and then they've nothing and nobody left by the time they play Leinster at the weekend and lose 40-7.
And it's not necessarily a failure of, when you watch that Leinster game back, you're not talking about a failure of systems or the game management or anything, you're just talking about kind of the cold harsh reality of ability. You're talking about the, when you go that low into a squad, and Dan McFadden has done a really good job there so far, but they just don't have numbers. It's really apparent when you see kind of the fatigue, like a guy like Eric O'Sullivan, who's 20, and they're becoming kind of reliant on him now, himself and Marty Moore playing the first Inter Pro, and it turns out they don't have them, and their scrum severely weakens because of that. So, that's just down to sheer numbers. And I think from McFarland's perspective, the next job now was to kind of develop that, the middle tier players who could come in, and maybe that is down to recruitment as well. Like, maybe in the summer you need to get five or six guys who will just be there constants, who won't be away with international squads, or who would just be able to reinforce your panel through kind of these kind of, you know, fixture dense periods.
Yeah. Right. Well, we'll get to Munster, Ulster and Leinster's Heineken Cup games and talk a little bit about how the teams they're playing are getting on in their respective leagues over Christmas, and kind of see what's facing them next year. And obviously, as I said, we will speak to Dolly Weir in just a couple of minutes. But before we do that, when we started this show, one of the things we were looking at was in the international window, and it was like, you know, how does the international media perceive Ireland? You know, our run of form that we like to wax lyrical about and talk about, you know, is that seen in the same way outside of the country as it is here? And you seen a couple of articles kind of like looking ahead to 2019 in rugby that kind of caught your eye around the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you see, so this happens in the Irish press too. It's these predictions for 2019, but obviously there's a lot more rugby focus in places like Australia and New Zealand to these previews. And it's just interesting to see the perception of Ireland now, particularly after the win over New Zealand there. So, for example, you look at Fox Sports, and their lead sports writer is predicting that Ireland win the World Cup. And because Ireland win the World Cup, his prediction is that Joe Schmidt's, because of the consequence of what I'll do for New Zealand, will eventually have to come in and take the New Zealand head job. So because New Zealand will be so shocked by the fact they didn't win a World Cup, that they're going to look to an outside influence, which they don't necessarily normally do.
Yeah.
And that's how that'll lead it. Similarly, in New Zealand Herald, again, we saw this after the Ireland game, and we're kind of wondering, is this slightly pandering enough? But there seems to be a real representation of this Irish team now, that from abroad that that Schmidt is building towards a World Cup, that has been his ultimate goal. And so there's maybe a slight, whatever happens, teams are not going to underappreciate Ireland coming into this World Cup.
Or underestimate us, definitely. Yeah. I don't know. I had a very stark realization over the break, Morris.
Go on.
We're playing either South Africa or New Zealand in a quarterfinal. No matter what happens, I think we're going to be underdogs in either game.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because I think South Africa they're not the mess that we see every 3 years in November in Dublin. You know, this is going to be a real South Africa team. And I'm not saying we can't win. I'm absolutely believing this team. If they go out in another quarter final, it's not going to be like losing to Wales.
No.
Or Argentina. And I think the Irish public, the Irish rugby public, and the sceptical Irish sporting press who don't necessarily like rugby need to prepare themselves for the fact that this might be same old, without actually being same old, same old. We're months away from it. I'm not going to get into it too much, but it's starting to dawn on me that this is the rottenest straw we could have possibly got. You know?
I mean, and you just have to, like, that ultimately you just have to, at some point you're just going to have to deliver. Like, that's what that game is.
Oh, they absolutely do. But, you know, if they'd beaten, you know, if you get the same draw and you beat Argentina in a quarter final and then you lose to South Africa by a point in the semi, which might happen in the quarter, there's a very different narrative there, and you haven't done anything differently.
Yeah.
You know, so that, just to keep that in mind, I do agree that you do ultimately have to get over the line and win one of these games.
Yeah.
And the draw is the draw. Everybody gets a tough draw.
Yeah.
But it's tougher than we've had before.
Yeah, the pool perspective is pretty nice. I know, obviously, it's not ideal to be playing a fired-up home nation, and then...
Yeah. It's an easy enough pool, but we would have got out of the pool anyway.
Just in terms of, from that perspective, I think, like, ultimately, I do think it's about kind of it all hinging on one day. I know it's not an ideal job, but it hinges on one day. You just have to do it.
Yeah, and look, they've done it every time we've needed them to do it in the last year or longer. They have, so let's not write them off. as we haven't even begun our build up to the World Cup yet. I'm not going to write off Ireland, but no, it is interesting to see though that isn't just a post beating New Zealand shock disorder.
Exactly,
that people are thinking that Ireland are a real contender. That in their look ahead to 2019,
it's entrenched now. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So, as we mentioned earlier, the Ireland-England Legends game will take place in the RDS on the 2nd of February. You can get tickets on ticketmaster.ie/Irish Legends from just €10. The proceeds from that game are going to go to the My Name 5 Doddy Foundation, set up by former Scottish international and Lions player Doddy Weir, who is unfortunately suffering from motor neuron disease, and Morris caught up with him earlier.
Yeah, I think if I can go back a little bit, the foundation, My Name's Doddy Foundation, set up for a year, and what they've got, the most amazing trustees behind us that some people might recognise the name, which is Finlay Calder, John Jeffrey, Gary Armstrong, Scott Hastings is here today, he's the chair, Jill Douglas, who does a lot of commentating on the telly as well, my good lady Cathy, and Stuart Weir, who's involved in the media. So set up for the first year, and with that would, due to the generosity and support throughout the world, particularly in the rugby family, we've been able to spend over £1 million towards research. And I think being involved in where we are, we're able to see MND is quite a complex issue. It's not an easy fix, but the annoying thing for myself and why we went ahead, there's nothing new on the table for the last 25 years. And with that, I think that's outrageous that people with MND, this is a terminal issue. And the life expectancy once diagnosed is the average life expectancy about 3 years. And I'm fortunate in a way that 2 years in, still here. So what we've been able to do is fund gene therapy, which has come on a long way in the last 5 years. So that's at King's College in London. And we've also helped Edinburgh University in the repurchasing of drugs, which means that they're looking for drugs out with... There's quite a strict health and safety thing around drugs. So what they're trying to use is, say, drugs that have been used in cancer. Do they have an effect of MND? So that's come on a little bit in the last number of years. But for myself, the frustration is it's not coming on quick enough. And that's what we want to try and propel. And that's where we are with the foundation. And thanks again to everyone involved. And I think the example is in the 1st of February, we've got a most amazing game happening, and it's the 11th year, and I think they've generated a lot of good money to go to worthwhile causes in the past, and this year very kindly selected my foundation, so it's quite exciting as an example that's needed to try and generate money, and that's where we are going with, and with that in the future, we have a group of professors that we meet on a maybe 6-month basis, and building up a rapport with them, and what we're going to try and fund, believe it or not, is the clinical trials. So the research is there, but they've got no money to actually bring the clinical trials out to the patient, because the NHS and other fundings won't do it. So we need that to happen. So the foundation is going to try and propel them into the market. It's a bit like, I say, you've designed a car engine that does 200 miles an hour, but you can't test it to see if it actually makes it or not. And that's how bad the situation is. There's no racetrack or race driver, so you don't know if it's going to make the 200, or if, and you don't know how to adapt. Well, MND is exactly the same in the drugs industry at the moment. They've got certain things that are ready to go, but they don't have the funding to put them over the line. So in the next year, we've pledged another £1 million towards research to try and ultimately find a goal or a stoppage, so myself and many others can stay around and annoy you with some horrendous fashion. People who maybe don't know about MND, I don't know if you know what the symptoms and things are. It's the most horrific issue and disease, because it's a muscle wasting disease. So once it gets to your legs, you can't walk. Once it gets to your arms, you can't clothe, you can't lift, you can't go to the toilet, you can't eat. It also gets to your swallowing, so you can't swallow, you can't eat, you can't breathe, you can't speak. So the whole of your body shuts down. Eventually, all you can do is communicate with your eyes is the ultimate goal. And as I mentioned, the life expectancy is not very good. And why am I quite positive? Well, I get emails from the foundation. We got one a wee while ago saying that this gentleman in Yorkshire, this is from his brother-in-law, to say, big man, keep up the good work, because this fellow was diagnosed in September 2017 and died in December 2017. He was 38 years of age and he had 2 kids, 2 and 5. So when you hear about that, and I'm 10 years further on, the kids are 10 years further on, what have you got to grumble about? And that's where my positive thinking comes in, and because speaking to Joost van der Veshezen's team, who you may or may not know, unfortunately passed away with motor neurons disease, he spent a lot of money trying to find a cure for himself. It didn't work, but his team said the best drug that he had was positive thinking. And that's where I think I'm from, but it comes about with the support, like meeting you guys today is just phenomenal. It's helping me, it's helping the awareness, it's helping the most amazing game and the 1st of February as well. And it's all working as a team to try and find this ultimate cure, and that's what life's about.
No, you wrote in your book that you initially Googled it to disorder, but prior to that, how much did you know about the condition?
Very little. The only bit before that was with Joost van der Veshezen, because he did a trip to Murrayfield and he wasn't very well. So he was on oxygen, he had care, so he couldn't do very much himself. I don't think he could even drink himself. And there was another gentleman in the room, a boy called Ewan MacDonald, who can only communicate with his eyes. So these boys came in, we helped them quite a bit, realised motor neurons disease, but didn't realise the full impact, what it had. So when we Googled it, because really what happened was I caught my hand in a door, thinking I'd lost power in my door, but that was the start of the disease, and then my skin started twitching. Then I Googled it and thought, we're in a wee bit of trouble here. And then 6 months later, because there's no one, you've got to go through a lot of different areas to see you've not got it. So blood tests, lumbar punctures, brain scans, shock therapy, just to see. So we had to go through all that to be officially diagnosed, I think 2 years ago, to say, more than you, here we are. So until then, very little. But I think with any luck now with the foundation and what the support and generosity of people, know a little bit more about it. But this is all because there's nothing out there. There's nothing with people of MND, and I think it's ridiculous. In 25 years, there's not one extra tablet or area. And with people MD, you've got a self-cure as well, which means you've got to go and try, go out on the web and try and find your solution. Because the professors do not go and say, well, try water, try Guinness, try exercise, try sunshine, try asparagus or anything like that. None of that. Every single person has to find their own. Because when I got told, I was pretty much said, there's a corner, there's your nurse. When you're not very well, she'll look after you. And I just thought that was a bit outrageous. So here we are in a little bit of a fight and a crusade to try and make a difference. And we've got some great people behind us that have done that. So thanks to everyone.
The inspirational Dottie Weir there chatting to Morris. As we mentioned, Dottie's foundation, the My Name 5 Dottie Foundation, will be the main recipients of the proceeds from the Ireland England Legends game, which is taking place in the RDS on the 1st of February. I think I might have said the 2nd earlier, but the 1st of February, Friday night, 7 p.m. in the RDS. And you can get tickets on ticketmaster.ie/Irish Legends, starting at just €10. All funds then to the My Name 5 Dottie Foundation, and which funds research into motor neuron disease. Very good stuff there. Few more things before we wrap up, Morris. I'm going to look ahead to the Heineken Cup and to the opponents of the Irish teams and look at their form. But one other piece of news that caught your eye was the rumour, and it might be a little bit off yet, but the rumour that the English Premiership clubs are planning possibly a coup or a breakaway from the RFU.
Yeah, we hear it's the eternal struggle within the Premiership is this idea that they want to ring fence it and not have promotion relegation. And now the next step to that is that reportedly they've had discussions about leading a breakaway and hosting some games in China and the US. And again, ring fencing it so you'd have 13 teams. Because generally what happens is London Irish or one goes down, Bristol Bears goes up, and then London Irish go up, Worcester go down, and it's the same teams. So they just ring fence 13 teams is what they're talking about doing. There's a lot of stuff with that to play host with there.
We should talk about the pros and cons and all that and why it's probably received such a bad reaction. But I think it is important to say as well that this is something that they have admitted to having discussions about, but saying that we're nowhere near it. This isn't even something we've discussed with the RFU. This isn't something that's happening in anytime soon, and it's probably jumping the gun a little bit to be kind of reporting this as a them being on the brink of leaving or anything like that. I think they said they have an 8-year deal or something like that still to go. So like that's important to mention first, but I think the bigger issue is the fact that these discussions are even happening and where it could lead rugby in general as a sport even down the line if these kind of
it's also important to note that
they develop them
so right now there is a negotiations happening between the RFU and the Premiership, and you know, you don't understand, like, people might, the way you utilize the media, that maybe if this story is out there, that it might influence those discussions. You just don't know. You don't know but the effect is we know that the Premiership for a long time have wanted to ring fence it like this. I think when we talk about the Premiership wanting to do it, it's more so like it's an owner scheme. It's an owner driven agenda, effectively. And I think a lot of the time that the reason that's done is because, like in the NFL, if you can ring fence it and you can have teams where there isn't a massive influx in terms of teams going up and down, then money isn't driven towards talent, it's driven towards profits. And if it's driven towards profits, that's just one consequence when you ring fence a division. It's a positive
because there are less options for players, so therefore everything is cartelled into
you've got the same NFL is a really good example. I mean, you look at Premier League clubs, a lot of association football teams aren't profitable because if you get relegated, the windfall from that is pretty diabolical in terms of what you miss out on that. If you ring fence it, and so all the money is driven and distributed in terms of broadcasting deals, and then revenue isn't driven up and down. It's not, you know, you don't, talent doesn't dictate where money goes. If that's the case, it also helps teams become more profitable if you can ring fence it. But then at the same time, what does that do to your quality of your league? I'm a big fan of the Pro 14, but you look at what happens midway through a lot of seasons when teams suddenly realize they're not going to get relegated, but they're definitely not in contention for Europe, and they just totally fade away, and those games become dead rubbers. And then that has a knock-on impact on the other league. And the Premiership is constantly maintained, and they're probably due right that they are a stronger and a better quality league than the Celtic League or elsewhere. Even some say top 14, but if you take away relegation from that, that's no longer the case. Like, you get stages and seasons where those teams just don't have any sort of motivation to play for anything, and when that is the case, your quality is just going to diminish. It's just inevitable.
Yeah, and also like there is other other issues as well of breaking away from an RFU or a rugby union in general. If it happens elsewhere, is that you are that already clubs are their own priority and their deals with the unions in terms of international breaks and international players and player welfare schemes like we talked about earlier and all, they're tenuous at best and they feel like they're fighting against their own best interests by making these deals, but it is generally for the best interests of rugby as a whole to have them. You break away completely from the RFU, that's no longer there. Do players get released from international rugby?
Definitely, yeah.
Is there a kind of a very weak agreement where the clubs have all the power just because we need to have some kind of international setting? And then does that fundamentally change rugby? Does that mean that suddenly these clubs have all this money, they've all this set up, it's the pinnacle, no longer is international rugby? Does that mean Irish players start going over there for big contracts, and possibly, and the RFU eventually have to change their rules and people come over and international rugby becomes like international soccer?
Yeah.
Except with a lot less countries involved and a lot less, you don't have that bring together of the whole world for a World Cup. You bring together however many, 10, 15 countries. So it definitely like that, it would fundamentally change how we view rugby. Rugby, the international game is the pinnacle and it's one of the best things about it. And it means that we have the Six Nations every year where we get to go and spend 2 months watching these teams all play each other every year. We get the World Cup every 4 years, etc., etc. I think that completely changes the further rugby becomes into being a club business.
Yeah.
And a business is the most important word there, because the more and more it is a business and the more it is privately owned business outside of non-profit rugby unions, then I just think you're in trouble. And maybe that's fine. Maybe that's just the way it is and the way it has to be. And, the game thrives in its own way. But it's not what we will have grown up with or what we will have, I think, in Ireland ever want to see.
Yeah, and even, if these clubs, there's nothing wrong with, if they are going to be a business, there's nothing wrong with wanting to maximize your profits. That's just natural. It's a natural consequence. But there's alternative means to do it. I mean, in that same article, they cited the fact that these teams don't have the same social media presence or digital presence as Pro 14 clubs. You're lagging behind clubs with way less a profile.
Yeah, why?
At the same, exactly. So why aren't you maximizing your marketing revenues? At the same article cited the fact that Sky feel like their stranglehold on rugby is lessening now, especially with this divvying up of the Heineken Cup. Why couldn't you start using them as a potential interview, and then you get broadcasting, you increase broadcasting revenue? Like, you don't need to go to such drastic measures to do that if that's your end goal.
And I suppose they haven't as yet. And this is something that happened that led to a hypothetical conversation, if you know what I mean. It's not from nowhere, but it's also probably not anything that's imminent or anything like that. But it is definitely, I think, a general worry as to, look, things change, things evolve. If you look at what the rugby world is now compared to what it was in 1990, they're two different, completely different worlds anyway. But so things will change. I just don't think we want to see it going down a club first, club only route in the way that football has. Right, so Heineken Cup's back. Heineken Champions Cup, I think it's still officially called. It's hard to know anymore, they've changed it so many times. But this is great, because this is what you need as well, after kind of like you have all the interpros that keep you more interested than you usually are in the Pro 14. Six Nations isn't that far away, and now we've got three Irish teams who are all competitive into the last two rounds of the pool stages. So I can't wait for this, and it starts on Friday night. Which is brilliant as well.
Brilliant, because
sometimes you get an Ulster game on Friday night, but you rarely get a Munster and Leinster game. But Gloucester and Munster, 7:45 on Friday night.
In Gloucester. A Munster who this is a pool. I think there's Gloucester at bottom of this pool. There's 4 points between them and Munster. It's unbelievably tight.
Munster have 12 points at top. Gloucester are last with 8 points. So Munster have drawn and lost and won two and are still somehow top of this group. It's everybody's beating everybody. That's a great group, though. Honest, if you're asking about like the nefarious influences of the English and French clubs, they did cut this competition by four teams. But God, it's more exciting in the group stage now. Like, you have to be honest. Like, and this group is the perfect example of it. But we said we'd have a look at what the opposition teams are doing, because we won't know as much about them as we will about the Irish teams. But Gloucester, to start off with, They're fourth in the Premiership. As we said, they're last in this group, but still in it. They could technically go ahead of Munster this weekend with a bonus point win. They're fourth in the Premiership. Sounds pretty good. Not a great Christmas period, though, since they last played in the Heineken Cup. They beat Newcastle in Newcastle, but since then they lost at home to Sale and lost at Leicester. And the last time we were talking about Leicester, or the last time we were on the show, we were talking about Leicester and where have the great Leicester team gone, and Jordan Murphy's in trouble, etc., etc. But they hammered
in a really a weird game. I mean, every time, the same frailties with Gloucester every single time. Like all their tries came from going out wide. Johnny May scored twice. I think he's now the top scorer in the Premiership. They've scored, and Billy Trelawney is kicking well because Cipriani isn't there right now. He won't play against Munster either. But I mean, their only try came from an intercept. And it's more so as how they can see tries, not necessarily where they're conceding them. Like, you've got props lined up against wingers, like real defensive mishaps that lead to these kind of system mishaps that lead to these scenarios where you come around this. I think John Ackman said after that game that he was really disappointed that after a poor end 2018, they didn't turn it around straight away in 2019, which puts big pressure on a home game on Friday against Munster when you're coming in that kind of scenario, and you're looking for a bump, like you're looking for something to kickstart your year and get it going, and all of a sudden you've got a what's for them is a must-win game.
Yeah, and it's like now it's like you slip down to fourth or whatever, you lose a couple more games in the Premiership, you slide towards that dreaded mid table you talked about. You lose this game, you're probably out of Europe. They're on a precipice at the moment. Like, this is a tough kind of, this is a go either way kind of game, and they're home to Munster. People will remember the other game. Morris had to remind me a few minutes ago, actually, but everything's going well for Gloucester until Danny Cipriani gets himself sent off. Munster bringing out the worst again in their opponents. What is it about this team? Can't wait for that. That starts things off on Friday night. Then it's all go on Saturday, because Leinster, at the weird time of 1 p.m. on Saturday, these you never know when your team is going to pop up in the new BT Heineken Champions Cup structure. But Leinster and Toulouse at 1 o'clock on Saturday. What a game this is. Like, I mean, we know what Leinster are like. We know that this division, Toulouse are 2 points ahead of Leinster, which means that Leinster playing in the RDS, like, this is for them, you know, they're in control of this group. You win this, you're going to go 1 or 2 points clear, depending on the size of the result, possibly even three, and you're in control, and that's where they need to be after losing in France. But this is going to be so tough, because this is the real Toulouse again all of a sudden. And just looking at their form since Christmas, we've already known they're good. They're second in the top 14. They drew with Clermont. They're close enough to them at the top. And this is a unstoppable Clermont team. Clermont's points difference in the top 14 is similar to like Leinster's hilarious points difference in the top 14. It's like plus 250 or something like that, you know. Like, and Leinster's, I think, is about 250. I think Clermont's now is like 230 or something like that, which is insane, you know. Like, you're talking 14 games or something, like, you know. So they drew with Clermont in a 20-all draw. That was an absolute classic in Clermont. They beat Toulon, who aren't having the greatest season, but it's still Toulon, 39-0. And then they beat Agen away in their last game. So this is a Toulouse team in super form. Yeah, and they're back to their best.
Like, I think they're like 12 games unbeaten now coming into this game. And as you said, like, this, like, that's your Clasico there. That's your super draw. This is a Clermont team playing the French rugby that we kind of grew up loving. And even if you're not talking about necessarily like players like Kobali, who's obviously not French, but is totally buying into this, you know, ad hoc, we'll play what's in front of us, heads up rugby, we'll run it from absolutely anywhere. And which makes it, whatever, I mean, they're, because obviously it's going to be really competitive, but it's also immensely entertaining. Like, that game I was on in France initially, it was a really fun game to watch. And that's what you'd hope to get again this weekend. Like, you'd hope for this kind of mega clash that these two teams are just going to have a cut off each other and this thing. And that's kind of, like, when you talk about that French royalty, French rugby, that's what you want. Like, you want to kind of get that wow factor. That's why we watch rugby, to get that sort of enjoyment. So whatever about, like, tactically or anything like that, this is just a game that you just sit back and say over. Like, it's just to enjoy.
It could end up being a tactical masterclass, it's kind of one of those things that these two teams are so good that no matter what way the game goes, I think it'll be entertaining and close, I would imagine, as well. There's still a bit of you that sort of thinks that if Leinster turn it on any day, we're still in a position, as we were kind of talking about a few months ago at the start of the year and definitely at the end of last season, where there's probably no one in Europe that can touch them at the moment, especially at home. So, you know, there's that sense, there's a feeling that Leinster could go out and win this, you know, by 10-15 points. But I don't know. I think it's definitely not going to be straightforward.
No, definitely.
For them to just go and do that, because Toulouse are definitely too good. Finally, before we go, it's the Ulster revenge on Laughing Simon's Evo game. because Ulster at home to Racing, this is going to be bloody hard because Racing are in decent form themselves. They're only sixth in the top 14. They're top of this group. They're 5 points ahead of Ulster, but Ulster are in second place. They had that good run against the Scarlets. I feel like they need to at least get a point out of this game. You know, it's at home. That's a terrible thing to say. Yeah. That they could, you know, a losing bonus point might be enough. They're looking at second place in this group, though, I think, either way, as their only way through to the quarterfinals. So,
as your seventh or eighth seed there, yeah.
So, as I said, sixth in the top 14 doesn't sound too good, but they beat the last place Perpignan 69-18. They then randomly lost, like, say randomly, they won 69-18, and then their next game lost 40-7 to Bordeaux.
Yeah,
away. So
a Brock James masterclass. I watched that game over Christmas. Yeah. It was like Zeebo actually, a couple of defensive howlers out there just didn't work out. But yeah, again, we talked about Sorin here. He was in our November team of the. He's in sensational form. It'd be interesting to see, does he play against Connacht this week? I think you spoke about Racing in a bit of a dog there, trying yeah. their sixth. I think
yeah, they beat Toulon then in the game this weekend. So
I think Bordeaux are seventh, so they need to get into that to push on. And so I would not be surprised to see Connacht have an easy run. And they'd rest
in
these
the
guys.
So,
yeah,
okay.
I
that's good
sure.
to know as well. We've covered Connacht's opponents there by accident.
In terms of for like, this isn't a season-defining game for Ulster because of the you're coming against the Mammoth, but it is still crucial. It's particularly given what we spoke about earlier. When you come back to like where Dan McFarlane, the games that he'll be judged on isn't the games when he's down to his third tier. It's when you've got your
everybody
first year
up,
and you're at home against a team that, as you like. It was a nothing gesture, but a team that effectively humiliated you in Paris. Like the way they ran up the scoreboard in the second half there, it was relative ease. So
I don't think, by the way, sorry, when I'm saying that bonus point might be the best thing to come from, that's just me. And I fully believe that Ulster think they can win this game.
Oh, absolutely,
like, you know,
yeah.
And they should.
And their
fans should hope that they can win it. And there's definitely a chance for them.
Yeah.
I just kind of feel that if they do get a bonus point, they do live to fight another day and they can get a second place team.
That has to be a minimum requirement, really. Yeah. To be honest, if you want to be competitive in Europe, I'm speaking to somebody who at the start of this pool I thought they should throw it away, like they should just focus on the Pro 14. But
right.
Now that they've invested and done so well, I didn't expect Scarlett's to be quite as poor, but nevertheless, that they've done so well now that you like this is as like it's still a really important game that you. Like I don't want to say it's season defining because it's not. It obviously isn't. But their performance will go along with showing just how serious this resurgence has been. Like you need to get back to winning ways after what happens.
Yeah.
Especially against Leinster, you know. I mean, not that it wasn't expected, but still, you need to bounce back.
It's not
away.
Season defining, but in a way, it goes back to what you said a minute ago. Everything we know about Ulster has a question mark after it, and this, I suppose, is the real. Where are you at? You're at home against the best team in your group. A team that you're probably expected to lose to, but you're at home, you've got your strongest team out. Do you have what it takes?
Yeah.
Because we don't know, because the Scarlets weren't what we expected them to be, and Munster didn't have a full team out, and you know, the various different things that come with every result they've had this season.
And that should
this is the first time you can say, right, we'll see. Ulster are at home to Racing, they lose by 4 points in a close game, they're on the right track.
Yeah, should be liberating for players as well. Like Will Addison, who spoke recently on the rugby podcast, spoke about this idea that the mood in the camp now is definitely, like they have bought into this idea that there's been a resurgence. Like you're back. Now is for the rest of the year effectively is about proving to what extent. Like this is, and that's what a question you can answer again with a massive performance against to finish out Europe, by the way, like not just against Racing, like their next two games, like finish out, even if you finish out with a statement, you know, you just finish out and it's just slowly proving that, you know, there has been improvement. We all know there's been improvement. This is your time to prove to what extent, you know, where you're going to go.
That's on straight after the Leinster Toulouse game, by the way.
Class day of rugby.
So it's a good day of rugby on Saturday. All starts on Friday night with Munster and Gloucester. That's all we have time for, really. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll go before I cough up a lung. something that will not be hourly pleasant, I would imagine. But thanks for listening and for watching. And we will see you again next week.
Thanks, folks.